Blog Talk Radio.
States Armed Forces and Men and Women Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Medicine at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having any problems in life, and you need to talk to somebody, please call a professional. If you're in the Brandon, Florida area, give her a call at 813-689-2466. Or if you're having problems breaking through in any kind of athletic endeavor, give her a call. She's been there, she's done it, and she's broken those barriers. Well, guys, it's been a great day and great week. Ty, how you doing?
Doing well. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Zito?
I'm doing fine.
And we have the magical Marion man here. Mr. Frankie is on with us.
Frankie!
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
How's it going, sir?
Hey,
how's it going,
good.
Frank?
And
good.
We're at full staff this week because we have Mr. I Made Many Tackles today and almost had a pick six, Mr. Brady Quinn. How you doing, Brady?
Brady.
Good.
Yeah,
I finally
heard Brady
got on
was only playing against girls.
Oh, wow. That's low.
He was playing against
low.
Cheerleaders,
low.
So I don't know.
Wow.
That's lower than Donald Poon's first shot on sister, what's her name?
Sandra.
Claire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sister Sandra.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sister Sandra.
What I was saying was I had to leave. I left early to get on the show because he blew out the other team. Ty,
yeah,
40
to nothing.
But yeah, I'll do a football report first.
Okay.
I don't really have that many notes, but I actually didn't think Carson Wentz was going to do that good, but he actually did. Like, I did not think a lot of him. Eagles did. They did good. Like, I was going to talk about the Cleveland game when I was gone, but I couldn't make it. And then, so now the Chicago game, that was a really good game. Wait, I forgot the score, but yeah, it was a good game. I think the Eagles might do good this season, though, because we were looking good. But we got to wait until we get to a high-caliber team, because then
I think
then
you might see a high-caliber team next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are we getting?
Yeah. You might be seeing a high-caliber team next week, sir. In the
I think tomorrow.
Steelers.
They're playing
against
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, that's tomorrow, right? Yeah.
That's my quarterback in fantasy.
Yeah.
I have Ben Roethlisberger.
High-caliber team is coming to knock tomorrow, sir.
Ben Roethlisberger is my quarterback. That's the only bad part in fantasy.
You might as well just jump onto the other side, Brady, and pull for Pittsburgh tomorrow with me, man.
pull out a towel and paint it yellow.
Yes, sir.
Make a terrible towel.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm talking about.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Can't put much gas, Brady.
Yeah. Been pretty good for the Eagles this season. But yeah.
Well, speaking of good fortune for the Steelers and for the Ties, we have a birthday today.
Oh, no, don't
Whoa.
Do that. Zito, come on, Zito.
Hey,
Zito, you
man.
Know better than that, dog. Come on, man. Come on, man.
I didn't know numbers went that high.
Hey, man, well, I'm younger than you.
You would have done it to me. So.
Oh, I just dawned on me. Frankie, man, I'm younger than you.
I stopped counting, though.
Well, you know what? Like Prince said, I was only born once, so I only have one birthday. But you know what? Today's just another anniversary of, you know, being fortunate to be here. And it's nice to be here with you guys on this day.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you sharing your birthday with us.
Yeah, no, it's a happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't be here. Next Saturday is actually is my wedding, so I won't be on next Saturday. So.
Oh, my God, you're getting married?
Goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
yep.
man.
Yeah, so we're going to be off next week. We're going to take the week off.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
I was going to go out, but I can't because,
school.
I don't know. School and I forgot the reason, but yeah.
Homecoming.
Yeah, there's no girl football teams out here to play.
Can you,
wow.
Can you send me cake?
I will
send
you cake.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Ty, what about HBO saying no to Manio?
Well, yeah. I mean, they've had a really limited budget all year, and so that's one of the reasons why Terrence Crawford, Victor Postol ended up on pay-per-view. So even though apparently, according to Bob Arum, they had one fight left on that contract with between Top Rank, Manny Pacquiao, HBO, but HBO chose not to put the pay-per-view on. Again, budgetary constraints, they kind of took a bath with the Pacquiao-Bradley pay-per-view. Jesse Vargas is not a big name, so they really didn't want to do that. So Bob Arum is going to distribute it independently, which is up to Top Rank, Golden Boy. They all have done their own pay-per-views before. And I don't think, honestly, HBO's marketing budget being what it has been this year, I don't think it's going to make a difference in how the pay-per-view sells, whether it was with HBO or whether it's distributed independently by Top Rank. I don't think it would have been any more promoted than Top Rank can afford to do as well. So I don't think there's no loss in that. It could just hurt the future relationship, obviously, going forward between Team Pacquiao and HBO. But there, I don't think financially it's going to matter one way or the other as far as who sells the pay-per-view.
Well, yeah. Ty, when you say bath, what kind of bath are we talking when they lost that money?
I don't know, but the pay-per-view didn't do anywhere near as well as they had anticipated. Same thing with the Canelo pay-per-view last week. Right now, that did, from what I've read, about 250,000 buys, which is, a pretty low number. I mean, it's getting lower and lower. It's getting lower and lower.
Yeah.
He did like 300 so or 400 so for Khan. So, obviously, there's a certain amount of numbers that they're kind of expecting. With Floyd Mayweather, in his getting millions, and not only Floyd, but Pacquiao for a while was in, the upper 900,000 to a million, but now all that's dwindling down. And so obviously the networks are a little bit less likely to want to put a pay-per-view together if they don't have to, especially if they're not two established names. One established name is not necessarily drawing the numbers like it used to a few years ago. So that's kind of the state of the game now.
But wouldn't it make more sense for them to just have it as like a Tuesday night fight or something like that, or a Saturday night fight on HBO? Because they would still draw the audience. Or is there not as much money in the payout for the boxer?
That's what it comes down to.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like, for instance, Canelo was supposed to fight on HBO December 8th, but he broke his hand in the Liam Smith fight.
Right.
But what happened is the boxer's salaries are getting so astronomical. That's why HBO, again, that's why Crawford Postol had to be on HBO. Had to be on pay-per-view. It was a very important fight. The number one and two guys at 140, unification fight. Essentially, the guy who wins is the man of the division. So it's a huge fight from a boxing standpoint, but not from a marketing casual fan standpoint. But to get these two guys in the ring because of who they are and where they're at in their careers, it would take so much money. HBO couldn't do that on the world championship boxing budget. They could only do it on a pay-per-view budget. So, again, that's what happens.
And this is gonna be a trend. It's gonna be a trend, and just because, as Ty said, it's one. If you have one marketable fighter, and you have one usually unmarketable fighter, unknown fighter, and what happens with that is with pay-per-views, that's not gonna do the numbers. You only right now have a certain select fights out there. No one fighter is going to draw the numbers.
Right.
It's only a certain fight, like a Canelo and Golovkin. Let's see about Ward and is Kovalev and Ward pay per view? Let's see how those numbers do.
Kovalev and Ward is pay per view. Most people think, that's the kind of fight that should be pay per view. You got, mythically the number 3 and 5 pound for pound guys going at it. Like, these are two of the best fighters over these last few years. That's something where it's like, okay, that's a pay-per-view. That's a Super Bowl, right? No disrespect to Leon Smith, but Canelo Alvarez against Leon Smith is a pay-per-view. So what happens is pay-per-view now, which is where boxing you know, these guys generate this huge revenue, it's not even about the best matchups. What's the biggest fight on pay-per-view that everyone's talking about that's not happening, right? Canelo against Golovkin.
Yeah.
But 99% of the boxing world believes Golovkin will go ahead and smash Canelo. Yet this is the fight that needs to be made and everybody wants to see. Why does everybody want to see a fight that they all agree in their mind is a mismatch, right? Why Andre Ward, like, if you just go by competitiveness, the Andre Ward Kovalev fight should be one of the biggest selling pay-per-views of the year. That's a 50-50
Absolutely.
Fight. That's a 50-50 fight. Everyone knows Golovkin, Canelo at this point. No one looks at it as a 50-50 fight, but they feel it's a fight that needs to be made because Canelo's a popular guy, and Golovkin's the monster in his backyard rising in popularity. It has nothing to do with the actual competitive aspect of the sport. And so I think until you get all that straightened out, along with certain, you know, money's going to certain people, it's never going to be on network TV. Not to mention, even with PBC being on network TV, they don't have the marketing to cover costs. Al Heyman had that money up front, put it into PBS. So he's paying for the time. But the commercial marketing would cover the cost of what he has to pay the fighters. So, I mean, that's where we're at.
Well, you know, you bring that up. I was reading about Eric Gomez was, you know, saying that they need to make that fight. Yahoo had a whole thing on that story on that. And, you know, Eric Gomez wants to sit down with Triple G's promoters and hash that out. But they're saying now that Golovkin probably won't fight until September of 2017.
Well, Golovkin is probably going to fight in December again. And there's a good chance he could be fighting Danny Jacobs.
Alvarez
will probably fight in May, Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about the Golovkin fight, Mexican Independence Day in September of 2017. And Eric Gomez is saying they want to make that fight because it's the most lucrative fight for Canelo out there. But it's not a fight they want to make until they think they're ready, that they're, you know, until they feel their man has a more solid chance to win the fight. As a promoter, I think that's the right thing to do. If I'm Oscar De La Hoya, Eric Gomez, and Golden Boy Promotions, I'm not necessarily ready to put Canelo Alvarez in a ring with Golovkin. Golovkin is the undisputed number one middleweight. Canelo Alvarez has never fought at 160. He's fought at 155, which is technically middleweight, but he's never fought an opponent who's come to the ring weighing 160 pounds. So, to me, if I'm Oscar De La Hoya, before I go ahead and roll the dice on that, I want to make sure my man feels comfortable at 160. If he still can make 155 and he still can make 154, I don't care what everybody says. He's not as big as Golovkin. Golovkin can't make 155 or 154. When Golovkin makes 160, he's starting to look gone, right? He's 34. He might have been able to make it when they first said he'll fight anybody from 154 to 168. That was 4 years ago. 34, 35 now. He cannot make 155. He's a bigger guy than Canelo. And if Oscar De La Hoya is not comfortable rolling the dice right now in that fight, as a promoter, it would be bad business for him to do so. I completely agree with that. The mistake they made was talking,
yes.
bluster, calling Golovkin out. You can't do that. Boxing won't allow you to get away with that. That's the one thing boxing won't allow you to do. You call somebody out in your weight class, you got to back it up. You can't call somebody out, then drop the belt instead of fighting them. That's where they killed themselves from a marketing standpoint. Had Canelo Alvarez defeated Miguel Cabrera and said, you know what, I wanted to win the middleweight title just as a historic accomplishment, but these guys are still too big for me right now in this division. I'm going back to 154. If you remember, that's what Sugar Ray Leonard did when he won a title, I think, at 160. He said, hey, you know what, I won his title, but these guys are too big for me. I'm not going to be fighting here. That's all Canelo had to do. But, you know, he calls out Golovkin, and he creates a controversy that they're not ready to go ahead and draw a conclusion to.
And I think that's all fight hype. That's all fight hype to try to build up the fight. As a promoter, I would not put Canelo in right now. He has not fought in that 160. If you want to try to be advantageous, Canelo is the drawing power. So, I mean, to ask Canelo to go up to 160 and immediately fight Golovkin is like asking Golovkin to come down. If you want to do that,
how about they meet at 157 on the scales? That's what you're asking. If you're going to give Golovkin all his credit about winning, then why not try to even that up with concessions as the, you know, headline fighter? That's usually what the promoters do anyway. I mean, they do it against all other fighters, against journeyman fighters. They have to come down or usually go up to weight class, but they have to make the weight concessions. So, I mean, why don't they do it in this case? That's what I'm saying. They're clamoring, saying, well, all other champions have moved up. Well, you know what? A lot of them have had other people move, you know, to their comfortability of weight.
Marvin Hagler is the perfect example. He never moved up.
Exactly. So, I mean, you can't, you know, to really demean Canelo for not moving to this man's division where he's basically the man, and he's knocking people out, that's too much to ask. So,
talk about moving up to fight the undisputed guy in that division.
Yeah.
When guys made those kind of moves, that's because they were the undisputed guy in their division. So when Alexis Arguello moved up to fight Aaron Pryor, right? Alexis Arguello was the undisputed best dude at 5 at that time, you know what I mean? So Canelo right now, could you tell me that you would favor – he might be favored, but Canelo doesn't necessarily beat everybody at 154. So, you know, it is still a little premature. And I can understand, you know, from a business standpoint – what everyone's saying, that Oscar doesn't want to risk his golden goose. You know what? He shouldn't want to, especially in a scenario that he doesn't think is advantageous for him. As his promoter, whether I like it as a fan or not, he has to do what he thinks is best for Canelo, not necessarily what's best for the sport of the game, best for boxing. That's not his concern at this moment, not in regards to this one man's career. So I can understand that. But at the same time, I understand all the fan angst, because you can't sit back and say Mexicans don't F around, Golovkin can get in the ring now. You can't do all that and then turn around and fight Liam Smith. You can't tell everybody you want to fight Golovkin and then turn around and ask people to pay $65 to watch you fight Liam Smith. That's why his buy rate was so low, because you can't do that to people. That's the mistake that they made. The mistake that they made is they didn't keep Golovkin's name out their mouth. They could have just said, again, like Sugar Ray Leonard said, hey, man, I wanted to accomplish this, but these guys are too big for me. Right now, these guys are too big for me. I'm 25, you know, maybe it's when I'm 27. But no, he got caught up in a moment. So,
hey, let me ask you one other thing. Parker and Demetrenko are going to be fighting next Saturday. Demetrenko, I guess, has been running off at the mouth, and now Parker's trying to get even with him. How do you guys see that fight coming out?
Parker should go ahead and win it at this point in his career. Parker should win it. Yeah. He's beaten Carlos Takam, which to me, Carlos Takam was higher rated than Demetrenko, and you know, I think he's probably a little bit higher quality at this point in their career. So it's a good style matchup for Joseph Parker. He needs that. He needs more experience. He needs more rounds. So it's a great fight for him to take, and it's a fight he should win.
Experience. It's all going to come down to he needs the experience, and this isn't a bad fight to get the experience. But then, when you need experience, any fight can be, you know, it can be dangerous in a certain sense. So,
you know, guys, I want to bring up another. It's kind of a two part thing. First off, are they going to strip Tyson Fury of the title? And secondly, what do you think about Anthony Joshua's promoter, you know, Eddie Hearn, wanting Joshua to fight Klitschko? And do you guys think that they're gonna strip Fury of the title?
Well, Zito, did you want to go first on that one, or did you want me?
No. Go ahead. I want to respond to the Fury, second statement actually. Joshua Klitschko.
which I think is more bluster than anything, actually, by the way. But anyway, here's my issue. Here's my issue with that. First, we know Klitschko got injured, right? Then Fury sprained his ankle. So we're talking about two postponements going into a third one. The issue I have is at this particular point in time, I was not able to find any information on why Klitschko was hurt or how Fury was hurt, if he were injured. I wasn't able to find anything. The only thing I read said that he was medically unfit to fight.
Yeah, but that's so many things. That's such a catchphrase.
Yeah. And
hey,
so,
guys, we've just been joined by somebody who may have some information on that. A good friend of the show's, a long-time writer, a member of the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame, Mr. Bernard Fernandez. Bernard, how are you tonight?
Ah, perfect. Hey,
great.
I'm doing great.
Great. This
hey, Bernard,
is,
how you doing?
This guy's probably the busiest retired person I've ever met. Every time you try to get a hold of me somewhere.
Because
I'm
you can never retire from writing. There are too many pens and papers around. You can't retire from writing. Now they have been at computers. You can type it, too. So there's no way you retire.
Hey, it's the only thing I know how to do.
Maybe we should bring Bernard in on this. Ty and I were about to talk, and Zito. But we cannot, neither one of us, because Ty, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
What does medically unfit mean for Tyson Fury? I mean, it's just it seems to be like a catch-all phrase that they're like, oh, he's medically unfit. You know, does he have turf toe? Does he, you know, is he having migraines?
Frankie, when I hear medically unfit, and that's all I hear as a blanket statement, I tend to think mental issues.
Yeah.
Well, I think they said mental issues, didn't they?
There it is. I hadn't read that. I was looking for it, but
either.
That's what I assumed. That's what I assumed. So what have you heard, Bernard?
Well, I was in Quebec City when Tyson Fury appeared on the undercard of the first Pascal Bernard Hopkins fight, and I did an interview with him. And I can't really put a finger on it, you know, but he's a strange guy. And I know a lot has been said about, you know, him being a gypsy and you know, all this other sort of stuff. But like I said, I couldn't put a finger on it, but it didn't surprise me when I heard that this fight had fallen through and there were mental issues. And look, there's been more than a few notable heavyweights who have had problems in this area, you know.
Riddick Bowe.
Riddick Bowe, Oliver McCall. You know, I don't know why that is. You know, maybe it has something to do with being punched in the head one time too often. Maybe it has something to do with you know, just some sort of instability in their life. I'm not really sure, but I wasn't surprised to hear that because he seemed like a little bit of a strange guy that time back in Canada when I spoke to him.
That was something that, to be honest, Ty mentioned that said Tyson Fury said that he would win the heavyweight title and he didn't mind retiring afterwards.
Yep.
Do you think he's leaning toward that? Do you think that could be the case?
Well, that's hard to say. If he needs some sort of, you know, treatment or counseling, or theoretically, you know, that he could be, you know, ruled to have improved or whatever, but. I'm not really sure. You know, this may not be something like a broken hand or something that, you know, is going to go away at some point. You know. So I guess we'll have to see. You know, and Clifford Etienne, that's another name that you could throw out. And the strange thing about it is more often than not, it's heavyweights. It's heavyweights.
Wow.
Bernard, do you think that they'll real quick, Dad, I just want to ask him. Bernard, do you think that they'll, because he's got a mandatory bout, do you think they'll end up stripping him of his title?
Well, you know, there is a lot of questions about whether or not, I mean, obviously they're heavyweights. They don't have to make a particular weight or anything. But he was, you know, when the fight was postponed the first time, I mean, apparently, you know, he had gone the Roberto Duran route, you know, and was grossly out of shape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that's
a physical thing. But the mental issues—that's a whole different thing. And once again, I'm not a psychologist. I don't play one on television or anything like that. But I go back to that one interview that I did with him when he just seemed a little nuts, you know. And I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. But I certainly hope that whatever it is, you know, that he gets his act together, because he had injected some interest in the heavyweight division with that victory over Klitschko. And, you know, everybody was talking about, well, gee, you know, now you've got Joshua coming along and Joseph Parker and this and that. You know, there was some interest in the heavyweight division that there hadn't been for years. And you know, I don't know if that's going to go away at this point, but or be lessened to some degree. I mean, Wilder obviously is out for a while, you know.
Right.
So we'll have to see, but I just hope the guy heals mentally or physically, whatever it is, you know. I mean, because you don't want anybody, you know, to be in that situation.
Bernard, keep it with the Fury idea. Yui Fury was supposed to fight Andy Ruiz towards the end of the year, actually October 29th, and they just called it off. Do you have any idea on that?
Not really, but you know, the thing is that I will say this, that Jose Canseco had a twin brother, identical twin brother, and who was. I guess he didn't take enough steroids or something, but he was not a player. He was not the same player that his brother was. And when I look at Yui, the best of Yui to me is not anywhere near the best of his older brother, you know. And he's got the name, you know, and he's. I guess got the genes or anything like that, but I'm not really sure that he's going to be a factor or a real factor in the heavyweight division.
There was actually some talk this week, and I think it was more rumors than anything, because they were dispelled by the end of the week, of him possibly fighting Anthony Joshua and Joshua's upcoming defense. But again, I think the last I read, that was dispelled.
Well, it would sell in England. There's no question about that. But by the same token, Canelo Alvarez versus Liam Smith, I mean, did not sell pay-per-views, but it put 51,000 plus into AT&T Stadium. One of the problems I think that boxing has is that, you know, the best possible matchups don't get made, because when you have a Canelo Alvarez, or you have one of the British fighters or fighters that, you know, is very popular in Germany, there's not a whole lot of reason for their promoters to put them in tough, because they're going to draw anyway. You know, as long as Canelo's putting 51,000 into an NFL stadium to basically fight a fight that nobody really wants to see other than his fans – Where is the imperative to put him in with Triple G? And I don't know that I necessarily put that on Canelo. I talked to Bernard Hopkins about who, of course, is with Golden Boy about about Oscar, because Oscar, when Canelo was going to fight Kell Brook, he said, Oscar said, he's daring to be great. And Oscar dared to be great as a fighter. But Bernard Hopkins said, yeah, Oscar dared to be great as a fighter. He can't afford to be dare to be stupid as a promoter.
Exactly.
And, and the thing is that I would like more television executives and more promoters, more managers, to dare to be great with their guys rather than, than just to continue this, protection racket that they have, with the guys who are marketable anyway, in Atlantic City, as great a warrior as Arturo Gatti was, they understood that if they put him in with, you or me, that he was going to draw 12,000 people. And when you have a fighter like that, it's a curse and a blessing.
Yeah.
See, Bernard, I think that the problem is that the general public, because boxing has so relegated itself to pay-per-view, that the general public is really unfamiliar with the sport as a whole. Most guys couldn't name to you the heavyweight champion of the world at this particular point in time. Thus, what happens, I think, is the biggest matchup is not always the best matchup. So the fight that everyone says needs to be made, and this is what I said earlier, is Canelo Alvarez. From a competitive standpoint, 99% of the people believe that Canelo is going to get stopped in that fight. So it's, to me, from a competitive standpoint, it's not the best matchup. It may be the biggest fight in boxing right now, but it's not the best fight. Ward Kovalev, which I don't think is going to sell a tremendous amount of units on pay-per-view, that's a 50-50 fight. That's boxing making the best matchup. I don't think making GDG Canelo is making the best matchup. I think it's making a matchup fans want to see, but most fans already have an idea of how they believe that fight's going to go. So I think part of the problem is that we've lost the casual fan to the sport as a whole. So therefore, they don't even know what the best matchup is. They just know who the familiar names are, and they want to see those two guys fight.
Well, one of the holdups to Canelo and Triple G getting made is I think Oscar is acutely aware that he's got a 26-year-old guy and Triple G is a 34-year-old guy. And, the sands of the hourglass are probably running a little bit faster on Triple G. And, the stage has sort of been set for this to be done over and over again, not that there are that many super fights to be made, by the five-year waiting game that we had with Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Yeah,
Mayweather very well could have beaten Pacquiao at any time during those 5 years. But I think, he played the waiting game because he knew it would still sell and that his chances for success would be that much greater, by waiting. I mean, the Manny Pacquiao that fought, I mean, forget about the shoulder injury. I mean, Manny had gone years without a knockout. He was not the same guy who, had knocked Ricky Hatton and Cotto in the next week. From a business standpoint, Golden Boy is playing percentages and doing the right thing, but for their guy, but not for the sport of boxing. And that's what happens a lot. Everybody's looking out for number one, and they're not looking out for the overall health of the sport. And, that's my thought anyway.
Bernard, I've been making a case to where people are clamoring for Canelo to move up to 160 to face Triple G. Why not have Triple G move down 3 pounds and they meet at 157 on the scales? And I don't hear no talk about anything like that. I hear no weight concession from Triple G. So, I mean,
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, to the average person that's on Nutrisystem or something, 3 pounds or 4 pounds is not a big deal. But when you have fighters that when they weigh in on Friday, they weigh in at exactly the weight, the limit, and then when they enter the ring the following night, they're 15 pounds heavier. It is a big deal. You know, I always said that Roberto Duran had to be one of the greatest fighters of all time, because probably during the course of his career, he probably gained and lost 1,000 pounds. You know, normally that you know, that shortens your career. You know, you know, and for him to be that good, I mean, you know, when he was fighting at 168, I mean, yeah, he was fighting as a super middleweight at one point, and he was an old guy in his 40s and everything else. But let's face it, when he got knocked out by Tommy Hearns, they were not really the same size. Roberto Duran was a lightweight fighting as a middleweight, you know, I guess he was still good at welter, but every time he crept up, it got a little harder for him to take that weight off. So as he kept on continuing to go up, he was not the same guy, you know. And yeah, so, you know, I can see where this whole thing over 3 or 4 pounds, it may not seem like a big deal to the average person, but I can see maybe to where the fighter or his handlers, it might be a sticking point.
And that would be the same on the same spectrum. I could see where De La Hoya would see about his fighter. That would be that poundage difference, that 6 pound difference, could be that sticking point on the same end.
And another thing too, you know, when I said, you know, that maybe Oscar's tearing a page from the Floyd Mayweather playbook, he also might be ripping a page out of the Sugar Ray Leonard playbook.
Yeah.
Because quite
that's
frankly,
where
you know,
started.
When he fought Hagler, you know, he went to the Petronellis, or he and Mike Trainer went to the Petronellis and said, "We'll give you this much more money, but we want this and we want that," and you know, and basically everything from what corner, you know, and every concession that might turn out to be a competitive advantage that he could wring out of the Petronellis, he did, you know, and eventually it paid off. So
remember, even Oscar made Bernard come down to a catchweight when he fought Bernard for the middleweight title.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, and the thing is that sometimes it pays off and sometimes it is. You know, speaking about Bernard, I mean, you know, the thing is that we're coming up on September 29th on the 15th anniversary of his fight with Felix Trinidad. And, you know, the one thing that people forget with him was that probably next to Muhammad Ali, he was the master of the mind games. About knowing how to make people crazy and everything. There's all kinds of ways, you know, to get a competitive advantage. I mean, in retrospect, Hopkins throwing down the Puerto Rican flag and San Juan, it might have seemed crazy then, you know, but it paid off in New York in Madison Square Garden that night.
Yeah, I thought that was insane. You know, in regards to Triple G coming down, as Zito said, to 167, number one, I don't think he should have to make that concession at all. I think if he wants that big fight and if that's part of the concession, I think it's on him and his team if they choose to make that the concession. I think it's with him and his right. He has every right to say, you know what, I'm only going to defend the title at 160. I have no problem with that. However, because I have no problem with that, I also have no problem with Canelo saying, I still can make 154. We talked about Bernard,
exactly.
3 pounds being, you know, a lot to a boxer who's struggling to make weight. And right now, to me, Triple G looks like he is struggling to make 160. You know, every time I see him make weight, he's a little gone. He looks good, but he's a little gone. You can see he's not at his best. I don't think Triple G can make 154. I don't think he can make 155, not healthily. Canelo has made 154 and 155 healthy. So I don't think Canelo is a fully grown middleweight yet, despite what he weighs. So I think the argument that Canelo needs to come up or Triple G needs to come down, I think it's a moot point both ways. I think that, you know, Canelo being 26 years old, he's not 30 years old. So he still can grow more, you know what I mean, into that middleweight frame. Is he big enough to fight at middleweight? Yes, but so was Oscar, but we saw how effective he was at 154 against Felix, or 160 against Felix Sturm. So being big enough to fight a certain weight, Kell Brook, and being completely effective at that weight are two different things. Just like GG, Triple G could come down to 157, but how effective would he be? So to me, for that fight to be at his competitive best, it might take a few years for Canelo to go on that weight, maybe Triple G to slow down. But I think it's just as unfair asking Canelo to fight Triple G at 160 as it is asking Triple G to fight Canelo anything under 160.
Yeah, and I've seen more than a few people say, well, gee, you know, if he's not getting his fight with Canelo, why doesn't Triple G just jump up to light heavyweight, you know, and fight Kovalev or whatever, you know? I mean, that's a pretty big jump. I mean, it's easy for people that, you know, that are on yo-yo diets and they go up and down 15 or 20 pounds and, you know, whatever, to presume that can be the norm for elite athletes, and it really isn't. And one other thing, you know, we've all seen Canelo and Oscar get a lot of heat, you know, for you know, their chicken, they're afraid of Triple G and everything like that, and there may or may not be something to this, but to me, boxing is entertainment, and so. Who's the better actor, Sir Anthony Hopkins and Laurence Olivier or Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt? The fact of the matter is that, you know, whoever has the biggest box office in the movies is the guy who commands the, you know, the biggest paydays. You know, it's not who is necessarily the better actor, you know. And
so right now, the best actor by that scale is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Wow. So much for Shakespeare.
Yeah, well, at least I will say this, that I think he's a better thespian than Vin Diesel, but, you know, that's just
me.
Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Agreed.
Hey, Bernard, is there anything coming up on the Philadelphia? I see there's a resurgence with the 2300 Arena. Is there any boxers you want to let our listeners know about that are coming up in Philadelphia?
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that they got a fight on October 14th, and everybody's saying, you know, are you going to the fight card October 14th at the 2300 Arena? And I say, no, I'm going to be visiting family and friends, and for about 4 or 5 weeks, I'm going to be down in New Orleans and talking about, you know, and gaining and losing weight. I can guarantee you, as a New Orleanian, when I go to New Orleans for 5 weeks, I come back heavier than I did when I went down there. With all the respect to the venerable cheesesteak, you know, fried oyster po' boys are still my weakness.
Yeah, hey, Bernard, that's where Zito and I are originally from, New Orleans. So, yeah, we know something about that.
Yeah. Zito is one of the best
gumbo makers.
East of the Mississippi.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, you need to come up to my house for for Thanksgiving and stuff like that. You know, my wife, we have a tradition. You know, when we, you know, with the turkey and all this other stuff, but she makes a gumbo for all the special occasions up here. And we serve gumbo before we serve the other stuff, you know. So,
nice.
I've been in Philadelphia area for 32 years, but the way I look at it, I have 1 foot in New Orleans and 1 in Philadelphia, you know, and I kind of straddle between the two.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. You got to use the filet, too.
Oh, yeah, gumbo filet. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a young fighter that was coming along very well, seems to have fallen off the face of boxing right now, Ray Robinson, the new Ray Robinson, as he was called. I know he had a an accident and messed up his back. But is there any word of him coming back up there?
You know, I haven't really spoken to him or to anyone about him for a while. But, you know, it's interesting. And we talked, you know, since we were talking earlier about Fury, Tyson Fury, and, you know, whether or not, you know, he had some issues, mental issues. Those can be confidence issues, too, or whatever. You know, it was just a couple years ago that the number one rated contender, I believe, at least one of the organizations, was Mike Jones. And he's winning his fight with Randall Bailey. He gets hit with a big shot and gets knocked out, and basically he fell off the face of the earth. And I wondered, I said, how can a one punch knockout in a fight that you were winning when you were that close to having it all? I mean, how could that happen? But different fighters react to different things. I know some people will demean Gary Cooney. He was never that much to begin with or anything. If you ask Larry Holmes, he'll tell you that he hit as hard as anybody. You know, that Jerry was probably better than a lot of guys who have held versions of the heavyweight title. But when he lost to Larry Holmes, his confidence just went up in smoke. He was not the same guy. He felt like he let everybody down, and maybe Dennis Rappaport had protected him too much in building him up or anything like that. But whatever, he was not the same guy anymore. And I've often wondered about that. You know, how one fight, one disappointment or something, you know, can just basically ruin somebody's entire career. You know, and so I don't know. I have not talked to Ray, but he definitely has sort of fallen off the radar screen.
You know what, Bernard? I distinctly remember watching that Mike Jones fight with Randall Bailey, and the thing that, you know, Zito, we watched that fight together, and something Zito and I were talking about at the very beginning of the fight was Mike Jones. He had tremendous physical gifts. But in that fight, he did not look like a confident fighter. And he fought to me like he was afraid to get hit by Randall Bailey. And so during the course of that fight, watching the way he fought, I felt that if he did get hit, he wouldn't be the same fighter anymore. Because to me, his confidence was teetering as he entered the ring. And I thought Randall Bailey would crush it if he caught him. And he did. And to me, that's what I saw. I saw a fighter who may have been more cognizant of his flaws than we were. And that's how he fought to me.
Absolutely. Mike Jones, he ran from the right all fight long just to get caught with it. His confidence was shot. He was done from that. He figured, and this is me just kind of guesstimating, but he figured he can't run. He can't avoid the right that he knew was coming. He trained for that. He tried to avoid all fight long just to get caught at the end of the fight with it. That's the mental thing. I can understand that.
You know, there in boxing, because there are some guys that are limited physically. They're not the most talented guys.
Yeah.
They will fight you to the death. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And there are other guys who are vastly talented, but you know they're lacking something, some sort of intangible. It could be confidence, whatever. It seemed to me with talking about Mike Jones that when Mike Jones was fighting at the club level in Philadelphia, he was like a stone killer. You know, I mean, he knew that he was better than those guys. But then as he started rising in the ratings, he was like he was fighting not to lose rather than to fight
him. Yes, more Bernard. Yes, Bernard, that's exactly what he was doing, Bernard. He was fighting not to lose. That's what I saw.
And you know, John Wooden, the great UCLA basketball coach, his teams won 10 national championships in 12 years. He said that's the thing, you know, when you're on top, the hardest thing in the world to avoid is you know, going from playing to win to playing not to lose. And you see that sometimes with fighters. Another thing, too, the mental thing, is like, you remember Jesse Ferguson? Jesse Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, the boogeyman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a guy that would give, whether it was Mike Tyson or whomever, could give him hell in the gym. And then all of a sudden, you know, when he's in the main event, like when he fought Riddick Bowe, he's not the guy that he could give Riddick Bowe or anybody else hell in the gym. All of a sudden now he's heading a show in Washington, D.C. at RFK Stadium, and he's the main guy, and he gets what's called sparring partner syndrome, you know, and he freezes up. And, you know, and we've seen that happen too. I mean, we all know guys that fit these descriptions. And, you know, they could have, should have, would have, you know, they could have been this, they could have been that. But they were lacking something, either physically, mentally, emotionally. Maybe they were a little lacking in the heart department. You know, there's a lot of things that can keep a fighter from fulfilling his potential. You know,
Victor Ortiz is a prime example to me. God, I think Victor Ortiz had tremendous physical gifts. He got a little chinny towards the end, but I thought he had tremendous physical gifts, and he fought with, he reminded me of a young Fernando Vargas too. You know, he fought with such passion and ferocity, but he didn't have that, you know, that same inner fire or intestinal fortitude that Fernando had that allowed Fernando to keep fighting even when the chips were down. So, you know, you're right. It's just, you know, everybody has something different inside of them, and not everything always translates to make the greatest fighter.
You remember when Lou DiBella signed all those Olympic fighters? And the guy
Better
who...
Now Whitaker, Holyfield
yep,
class?
Yep. Well, no. You know, Ricardo Williams and... Some of those guys. The thing is, he'll be the first to tell you, you know, that Ricardo Williams was the best of the bunch.
Mm.
In terms of talent, he should have been so much more than what he was. But he was a victim a little bit of the streets, and that streets can claim guys, and I didn't want to train. And then what happens is that what so often is that when a fighter is very talented, he relies too much on his talent and not enough on the intangibles. You know, he forgets how important they can be, you know, and so... Lou will tell you, you know, that, you know, Ricardo Williams probably is the greatest disappointment of his promoting life, you know, because he should have been so much better than he was. And it didn't happen for him.
Wow.
Complacency.
What about, let me ask you this, Bernard. What about a guy like Howard Davis?
The late Howard
why
Davis?
I mean, yes, the late, great Howard Davis. I mean, he still had a decent pro career, but why didn't his amateur success translate to that level of success in the pros, you think?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're gonna say that about Howard Davis, I mean, you could say the same thing about Mark Breland. Mark Breland probably, as an amateur, probably was the greatest amateur boxer the United States has ever produced.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a decent pro career. You know, the thing is that if you look at his pro career in relation to his amateur career, as a pro, he was probably, you know, a little bit of an underachiever.
Mark Breland had super world-class durability. I thought that was his problem. I didn't see that with Howard Davis. It just, you know what I mean? It just, Howard Davis, to me, had that durability. Mark Breland always seemed a little fragile to me physically. With Howard Davis, it just seemed like he just couldn't get over the humps at times to me.
Howard fought a lot of tough people, too.
You know Howard Davis kind of reminded me of in a way, and he was more talented. But you remember Steve Little? To me, Steve Little was – there are fighters – that are great fighters, but they're not necessarily nice people. You know, your qualities as a human being are not necessarily your qualities as an athlete. But sure. Howard Davis, to me, was one of the more decent guys that this sport has ever produced, and Steve Little was a lot like that, you know, and those are the guys that, you know, you're not supposed to have a rooting interest one way or the other in our business.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to be professional and non-detached and everything. But the fact of the matter is when you're around a Howard Davis or a Steve Little, Tony Thornton, the punching postman, was a lot like that too. You know, one of the things that strikes you is, you know, you hope that person has success for the simple reason that they're just good people, you know, and that's not always the case, you know. Talent doesn't necessarily make you a good person.
No.
Neither does success.
No.
Well, guys, we've just about come to the end of our time limit here. Bernard, I want to thank you again for such a great interview. You're always a great interview with us, and we'd love to have you back again whenever you got the time. I hope you, if you're going down to New Orleans, I hope you have a great trip. And
can I tell you something? I've enjoyed talking to you guys, and as I was doing it, I've been watching the LSU Auburn game with the sound turned off. You know,
LSU Auburn.
I can tell you that I am capable of multitasking.
Well, I have to agree with you because I was watching the Notre Dame Duke game, and I got to say, what a lousy game! But
Notre Dame didn't lose to Duke, did they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
38-35.
That's the only way it would be lousy for you. Wow, they lost to Duke.
Exactly right.
Hey, here's something.
Oh, two.
Here's
oh,
something
my
really funny. Here's something really
Duke
funny.
Football.
Here's something really funny. UMass, the University of Massachusetts, it's 35-41 against Mississippi University.
Wow.
That would be Mississippi State University.
Yep.
University
right,
of Mississippi
yeah.
beat the hell out of Georgia today. I just wanted to say that, you know. So
nice.
Hey, Bernard, was LSU up or was LSU up against Auburn?
It's 7-6 with 8 minutes and 17 seconds to go. And I don't know if he can take a punch, but every time I look at Leonard Fournette, I think, you know, there's a guy that could have been a pretty good heavyweight.
Well, again, we really appreciate your input. You always make this show a great weekend for me and for I know for a lot of our listeners, and we appreciate your time. We want to thank you again for coming on with us.
All right, gentlemen, you have a great weekend, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Bernard.
Thank you very much.
Brady, you want to lead us out?
Nah, someone else can. I'm a little tired.
Frankie?
Well, again, great week, great show. Appreciate everything that Ty and Zito bring to the show and keeping Bobby's dream alive. I do want to, I don't know if people are aware, but on October 19th, HBO actually has a show called Legendary Nights, and it's going to be the tale of Gotti versus Ward, which should be a really good show. So I'm going to be watching that. But again, guys, thanks so much for helping keep Bobby's dream alive. And Dad, I'll see you next Thursday night. And yeah, Brady, great job on the game today. Congratulations, buddy.
Yeah, great job. Ty did too. They've won their game 42-0, and Ty had some fantastic tackles. Z,
who are they playing?
Leave?
Notre Dame?
Yeah.
How about them Irish?
Z?
I want to thank Frankie. It's always a pleasure with Frankie on the show. I want to also thank Brady. Thank you, Butch and Ty. Always a pleasure. Good to be back. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
I think before we have Ty give him his, I think we all should sing him happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Which one is
Marilyn
Monroe there? That's funky Marilyn Monroe.
Actually stripping for you too while I'm singing. So
I'm just supposed to do that.
Okay, I just threw up in my mouth literally. So. Hey, it's been a great show, man. I love being with you guys. Frankie, dude, congratulations, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, I wish you and your lovely bride all the best, man. So I really wish you the best. Congratulations, dude.
Thank you.
It's a great
show.
Don't
forget to send me the cake.
Don't forget to send
Brady the cake. We thank Bernard Fernandez for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have Bernard on. He's one of my favorite writers. Bob is our co-pilot, and we'll see all you guys next week.
Hey, I want to thank everybody for coming on. Frankie, I'll see you Wednesday or Thursday night. Z and Ty, tremendous job as usual. Mr. Mel's listening. You've raised some great kids. And also, we hope Mr. Mel's, I know he had to go back for another operation. Do we have any update on that? Ty or Z?
He actually was feeling better. He actually was calling while I was on the show. I just didn't get a chance to click over. So I'm going to call him as soon as we're done. But, yeah, I talked to him yesterday. He's feeling better, and he gives everyone his best.
Great, great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. If you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just give them a wink, a handshake, anything that lets them know that you know they're there. Please, one of the nicest things you can say is, be safe, my brother or my sister. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Hill, Patrolman David Crawford, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrol Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent. Harris County Deputy Darrell Goforth. Prince William County Deputy Ashley Gidden. Useless Texas Patrol Officer David Heffer. In Hillsborough County, Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night and God bless.
Shem alek ma yilama. Shema Ezahir Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yer Ma
Shema Lek Ma Yer Ma Shema Ezahir Ma Son Hashem Grief and pain are all I know. My heart is so much.
a fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field.
County dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has answered his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Bob, we love you and we miss you.
Good night, Frank. We love you.
Good night.